Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, this is our third episode of Comic Corner presented by Freakopolis Geekery, our Star Trek edition. And with me, as usual, I have my plethora of comic book experts. Let's start off with Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing all right. And how are you?
I can't complain. It's a marvelous Monday. I'm spending it here with you guys. So what could be better?
Exactly.
I also have with us TJ, the shopkeeper from Freakopolis Geekery over here in Whitehall. How you doing tonight, TJ?
I'm doing very good. Today, Monday, the shop is closed Monday and Tuesday, so I spent the day kicking back and catching up on all the E3 things I've missed, as well as rereading some awesome comics we're going to get to later tonight. So, yeah, things are good.
Yep, we're going to have some fun tonight, and we also have Eric. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing great. I have a lot of Klingons staring at me right now with all these great covers. Man, there's some good art in these books, isn't there?
Yeah, J.K.
Totally,
is the man, isn't he?
J.K. is the man.
The man. He is the man. So we're going to be talking about Star Trek comic books, obviously. This is Comic Corner. And we've got a couple of great ones to talk about. We're going to talk about Discovery, Secession, issue number 2. We're going to talk about Star Trek, The Next Generation Through the Mirror miniseries. This was a weekly series, and we're going to talk about all of them, the entire series. And we're going to wrap up with Discovery, Light of Kaelas, which wrapped up with issue number 4. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. We are live right now, and the phone number here is 646-668-2433. I have faith that you'll call. And if you do call, you can be part of this live show, and your voice and your opinions will be recorded for all of eternity for the whole Internet to enjoy. So give us a call, 646-668-2433, and share your thoughts on Star Trek comic books. So let's just jump right in and let's talk about a Secession to start with. You guys may have noticed that we didn't play our usual we didn't start the series intro. Well, for two reasons. First of all, this isn't Trek talking. But most importantly, the theme song that you just heard is the completely, totally mirror theme that was used on Star Trek Enterprise in the Mirror Darkly. And they actually rewrote a special theme just for the Mirror Universe. And since the issues that we're talking about are Mirror Universe, I thought it would be fitting to play the Mirror Universe theme song, except for Light of Kaelas. But we'll let that one slide. So let's just jump right into Secession. I wanted to mention to you guys, I don't know if you guys caught this or not, but there's a scene where Michael Burnham is walking through a rebel camp with Harry Mudd. And there's a couple of kids playing in the background. And right in front of Harry Mudd and Michael Burnham is an Ugnaught right out of The Empire Strikes Back. And the panel right below that, there's a couple of kids playing ball. and they're kicking around a ball that looks exactly like BB-8. Did you guys happen to notice that or catch that?
Yeah, I've got my book open to that. I think you mentioned it once upon a time a couple weeks ago, and sure enough, here it is. They're on Ryza, and I love those little homages. That was a cool little thing to throw in there.
Yeah, I caught it right away. I was looking at it. I'm like, that can't be an Ugnaught. And I looked. I said, oh, my God, it is. And when I saw BB-8, I knew right away that they were just throwing a little bone at Star Wars. Charles, did you catch that? Well, what page is that anyways, Eric?
Well, it's the first page of issue number 2 where they go back to Ryza. So that's probably like page, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4 of the comic. Issue number 2.
It's like 4 or 5.
Yeah. Yeah, the one page before has the Ugnaught, and then the top of the next page is the little BB-8 ball.
That was kind of funny. I noticed it right away. I caught it. There were other things in there that I didn't catch, but that was one of the ones that I did catch, and I thought that was pretty cool. So, anyways, Charles, what did you think about the story for Succession so far?
The Succession story is doing very well. This one's really kept me up and curiously one issue the next what they're going to do with it. With the first episode and the main, not Discovery, Shinzog being taken over by its captain. And I'm curious what direction even the captain's going. So we got Michael's little side story and what's happening with the rebels. And then Shinzog, which you're still wondering what's going on with them. So I'm still at the point I kind of wonder what's going on with the episodes.
Yeah, because the next one is actually not Succession. The next issue is actually Incognito, right, TJ?
I think that is the next Star Trek comic to come out. But it'll be following up on Through the Mirror instead of the Discovery stuff.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting, but it's a good story, though. I'm really enjoying it, and I think they do a great job tying what we saw in the Mirror Universe on Discovery for those 4 episodes, tying it all together, letting us know what's going on in the Mirror Universe since they went back. And, of course, Michael grabs the Emperor and brings her with her to the Prime Universe, so there's no one left in the Mirror Universe to control everything. So we have a fight for power. It's very interesting. And I like what they did with Harry Mudd. You know, the Harry Mudd that we see in the prison ship and the Harry Mudd that's trying to take over Discovery with the time crystal is quite a bit different from the Harry Mudd that we see in these comics. Would you agree, TJ?
Definitely, yeah. I like the flip from sort of conniving, rascal sort of thing that we see in the Prime Universe to this very empathetic, almost charitable Harry Mudd that we see inside the Mirror Universe. You know, he seems to hang out in these refugee camps, and in the first issue, he was like doing, he's doing like doctor work, and then sort of some, you know, gave the kid a pet targ, like a little stuffed targ. And in this issue, he claims he can give food, medicine, clothes, nothing as fancy as Michael used to wear, but, can't do weapons anymore because he no longer does that. So it seems like maybe he was a bit of that rascal to begin with in the Mirror Universe, or, you know, sort of a back channel type guy, but since the Terran Empire has been subjugating so many people, he might have turned a new leaf since then, and I think that's a pretty reasonable story. It's funny because usually the characters we see in general turn sort of evil and dark, but Harry Mudd goes in the other direction.
Yeah, I think I would actually love to see this Discovery as a live action thing, because I would be interested to see how this character would come to life on television versus on the comic, I think it would be great to see him that way, as this conniving, backstabbing, not evil, but self-absorbed guy.
Selfish,
that we
yeah,
got.
Selfish.
Yeah, very selfish. But we'll have to wait and see. Well, what did you think, Eric? Did you like Harry Mudd, the way he's portrayed in the comics, or did you think he was better on Discovery the way we saw him?
Well, I actually really liked the way that they showed him on Discovery, and I liked the way that it differed from the way that they showed him on TOS. I thought that was kind of an interesting dichotomy. I absolutely love the way that they show him in the Mirror Universe. It's kind of the classic, you know, if everything was reversed, what would Harry Mudd be like? He's kind of this Robin Hood character, but you know what he does retain is he retains his connection to the underground. There's a scene where he, in the second issue, where he's talking to Michael, and basically he's trying, or she's trying to make a deal with him because she's looking for someone that she can't find, and it's somebody who doesn't want to be found. And, you know, it's hinted at here that throughout the years, she's done Harry Mudd some solids in terms of getting him out of Imperial trouble and whatnot. In return, he has constantly provided information to her. So even though he's kind of a nice guy, Robin Hood type, he definitely retains his kind of, you know, seedy connections to people, albeit maybe for the greater good instead of in a self-serving manner.
Yeah, and I think that's refreshing to see this character be multi-dimensional, because I think it's so easy to just be an evil bad guy, but when you add layers to that, like in this case, it makes the character that much more, it brings him to life that much better, I think.
Well, I think
there's
that's
more
part
to
of the
him
story
than, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the story of the Mirror Universe, I think, is that the idea in Star Trek is not that they're just supposed to show opposites or whatnot in the Mirror Universe, but really the Mirror Universe helps us explore deeper parts of essentially the same people. You know, it almost becomes a nature versus nurture type argument. What if the same DNA was thrust into a completely different situation? What would that person do? And I really like that about the Mirror Universe, because it allows a little bit of play. You know, you can have some opposites, and yet you can have some common threads that sort of carry through everything.
And speaking of that, the final episode of Discovery, Will You Take My Hand, which we talked about last week on Trek Talking, we actually get to see flashes of Captain Killy creeping into Cadet Tilly, in particular when she puts the gun up to the Orion traitor's face and she's going to blow her face off. And for an instant, you see Killy there. And when I put the poll up on Trek Talk, and obviously people have been arguing, well, how can we pick one over the other? We've never seen Killy. We've only seen Tilly playing Killy. But I don't think that's true. I think that we actually do see Killy, because I think she's studied the character. They have the logs from the ship. They know what this character did. They know the background. And I think that when she turns on her Killy, I think you're seeing Killy. Now, you know, the Mirror Universe one might be a little fiercer, might be a little bit looking a little older, like Giorgio said. But I think in the long run, when she turns on the Killy, I think you're seeing Killy. And it's nice, because I think what it shows us, Eric, is that, and there was an episode of TOS that did the same thing. I think what it's showing us is that the prime Killy is awesome and cool, and she's really one of my favorite characters. But when you infuse the Tilly that we know with a touch of Killy from the Prime Universe, you get a completely new character that's more confident about herself, and she's more assertive, and she's just a better character with just a hint of Mirror Universe in her, just a little dash for seasoning.
Well, yeah, and what's interesting, you know, now that you mention that, I mean, so what we know is that Tilly, Prime Universe Tilly, is a little bit odd, you know, and people have kind of speculated on the forums and stuff as to whether or not she has some sort of personality disorder or some sort of little quirk about her that makes her who she is. But you know, what she was able to do was she was able to kind of easily absorb the Kelly persona, like you're saying. I think what would be really cool is if, you know, presumably if and when we get to see the real Killy, I'm hoping, that maybe she plays her even differently. And so we get to see the difference between how Prime Universe Tilly played that character and how Killy actually is. I think that would be kind of an interesting dichotomy. You know, I mean, speaking of characters like that, I mean, there's so many great juxtapositions in this book. I mean, you've got Detmer. She takes over the Shenzhou, and I think in the span of three pages promotes herself twice. She goes from lieutenant to commander, and then on the next page she goes from commander to captain, which is awesome.
Sorry.
That's what I'm. No. Actually, it's when Detmer is promoting herself before Arium takes completely over. Detmer promotes herself twice, and then eventually, you know, Arium takes everything.
Arium kills them all. You're right. Yep.
And Arium kills them all off, and then she becomes the actual final captain. So I just love both of those characters, both the Detmer and the Arium characters, and how they're a little bit different. Actually, quite a bit different, right, from their. From their Prime Universe counterparts. And I really like that we kind of have the second villain, this Lord Alexander. You know, now that Giorgio is gone, we need a bad guy to stand in the way of Mir Burnham ascending to the Emperor's throne. And I like the story so far. I like that in the second issue they brought up their kind of childhood. At least there was one scene where they kind of interacted 10 years ago. And, you know, it's all about, of course, the classic Burnham's not really family. She's not really part of the club. Alexander really is. So really the fact that Giorgio made Burnham her heir apparent really pissed him off and kind of has driven him throughout his life. And so I kind of like that classic bad guy set up here in the series.
Yeah, and TJ, what did you think about the Mirror Arum? We haven't seen much of her on the series, but in the comic book, we see a lot when she takes over the ship and kills everybody. What do you think about her as a character and the way she's portrayed in the comic books? Now, mind you, this is the Mirror version that we're talking about.
Yeah, I think, unfortunately, we know more about the Mirror Universe one at this point than the Prime Universe one, but I literally have here my notes from reading it earlier today. It was my second read through. I have Arium is nuts. you know, it seems the power vacuum in the Mirror Universe, yeah, right, is larger than we first thought. There's not just, you know, people vying for the Emperorship like Alexander and Michael, but certain captains are using, or people on ships are using this as an opportunity to gain some power in their own ships. And Arium in this second issue of Succession, she blows up a star base, which I thought was really surprising. And it seems like she's really out for herself now. And I think she set course for Kronos, right? Let me check real quick. Let's see. Yes, she sets course for Kronos Warp 5, and sort of then has this speech about, you know, not working for the Terran Empire anymore. But I'm kind of surprised she doesn't go, like, I'm not sure what her play is exactly, what she's trying to accomplish. But, you know, if she's really mad at the Terran Empire, I thought she might be, moving towards Earth with the new weapons that they've been developing inside this series. Laurel does mention when she meets Michael Burnham that the refugees and sort of resistance have a traitor in the Terran Empire. And I thought, that could be Cornwall, I suppose. Cornwall.
No.
But it also could be Arium, I think.
Totally.
So it's much more to see from her, I think, in these next the issues that have not yet come out. I'm excited at her line.
Yeah, because like, what is she? Is she a Borg? We don't really know. They haven't said.
Well, she's I think they say that she's an enhanced human. So I think she's got like cybernetic stuff in her. But isn't she a human?
I think she says, you know, you've been saying I'm not quite human this whole time or something. So that does imply she's at least part human.
Yeah.
But yes,
and it's
she's got a weird look.
And that whole racial argument is what makes me think you're right, TJ, that she's about to defect, essentially. And she's got the new weapons. She's got the genetic weapon. And so she's going to take that back to the good guys. And we're going to see how that plays out in the next issue, potentially.
Yeah, we know she just got loaded up.
Yep.
But, of course, we also know that Emperor Alexander wants to head for Kronos with the weapons. Maybe she knows that, and she's going to sort of intercept and defy his orders. But I think that'll play out sort of in that vein, that she'll be a defector, yeah.
Well, there must be a clue at the end of this
issue.
Well, if
you think about it, really...
Go ahead.
If you think about it, the Terran Empire views anybody not human as substandard, and that would be her. So we don't know what she went through to serve on the Sinjar and how she was treated and what was done to her and whatnot. So now that she has the opportunity, and she killed all those people, and she actually said she was going to kill the rest of them if they didn't follow her orders, so she very well could be taking the super weapon and giving it to Laurel, kind of like we did in Discovery.
Yeah, I was wondering if there was a clue to where the story is going, and maybe you guys know more about this, but of course the last page of issue number 2 shows the ISS Constellation, NCC-1017. And so what's up with that? I don't know about that ship.
Yeah, that's
I mean,
a good question.
I took it as that's where the governor beamed up to from Risa, but still got to. I mean, their plan is to bomb it, but a lot to see yet for sure.
So remind me what the USS Constellation was all about in the regular series.
Let's see.
Does anybody have that offhand?
I know we've seen it in the series.
I feel like was that the one? That wasn't the one that was all Vulcans, was it? Oh no, that's the one they find it destroyed or something.
Let's see.
No, the Constellation wasn't that the ship that was commanded by Decker and got destroyed by the Doomsday Machine?
That's what it was. Yeah. So, do we see Mir Decker in Succession number 3 then?
Interesting. Yeah. So, Charles, what did you think about the Cornwall character in the Mirror Universe?
Cornwall is in the Prime Universe. We're not sure exactly what to think about her. I think in the Mirror Universe, we're not sure how to trust her. I think she's trying to work on both sides because she wants to follow the Emperor, but I don't think she thinks his plan should be that in depth. He shouldn't be trying to destroy places like he plans to. So, I'm not sure what to think about her.
Yeah, she's kind of in a gray area.
Well, I mean, what's interesting is that she says it's time for the Georgiou dynasty to end. But then she also talks about Lorca and his plans. And so it seems to me that she's more in the camp of getting Michael Burnham to the throne or potentially getting Mir Lorca to the throne, you know, via Michael Burnham, and that she's not actually working for Alexander in the long run. That was my take.
Now, they don't know that Lorca's dead, though, do they? I mean, we know because we saw the episodes, but the characters in this universe, are they aware that Lorca got thrown into the thing and disintegrated? Do they know that?
Well, they haven't mentioned that in the book here, and as far as I can tell, we haven't crossed that timeline of when that happens, you know, in Discovery. So, like, there's no talk of the Burren or anything like that. So, I don't think that. I think that maybe Giorgio might have been the only one to know.
Right. So they could still think that Lorca is hanging out there, making his plan to take over. They might not be aware of what we know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why that Michael Burnham story is so interesting, because she's obviously working her way, you know, she's trying to get, she's helping assassinate this governor so that she can get what she wants. She's working it from all angles, but.
This
right.
series is interesting, Succession, in that, a little different than the other two books we're going to talk about, just in that there's so many storylines going on inside this one title. You have you know, the stuff going on in the throne room with Cornwell and the new emperor. You have Michael Burnham. You have Arium. So it's a little more varied, I think, and I'm wondering how they're going to sort of close all those up within just a few issues.
Now, what are there? There's two more issues left, TJ?
Yeah, I think there's just, let's see, just two more. Number four comes out on July 18th. So right after we talk about, we have our next meeting.
We're just going to miss it. So, Jamie, I know you had a chance to read this book about the Mirror Universe. Well, what did you think about it? Did you like the story? Did you like where they were going with the characters? And do you think it followed what we saw on Star Trek Discovery pretty well?
Yeah, I actually liked how closely they followed the storyline with Discovery. And I don't know. I know we've said this a thousand times before, but I just can't get over how detailed they are with the art in each of these books. They're just outstanding.
Yeah, they do a good job. I'm very impressed with the artwork in these books that we've looked at so far. So the next one that we want to talk about is odd, because this was a weekly book. For every week for 5 weeks, Star Trek The Next Generation through the Mirror miniseries. Of course, our good friend J.K. Woodard worked on the artwork and also has a separate story in the back, a 5-page story at the back of every issue. And this was a weekly comic. And we started to talk about it on Comic Corner number 2, but we decided to wait until this Comic Corner, because this way we would have all the issues and we could talk about the entire story as a whole. So let's start with JK's story, because I'm really anxious to talk about that one. So there was actually two stories to follow. There's the story that picks up with Barclay going through the mirror and to our universe and everything that happens there. But then there's another story, which kind of I was more interested in myself. It kind of ties in what happened to Spock after Captain Kirk gave him the Tantalus field and he took command of the Enterprise. That's a part of the Mirror Universe that we've never explored, that's never been mentioned, never been talked at, never been looked at. It's just ignored. And J.K. writes a great story and a great explanation about what happened to Mirror Spock after he took over. I thought it was great. Yeah, so Ewok Karen is saying he got some Pon Farr action and ran off with Savick into the woods from Star Trek 3. But anyways, we never actually get to see what happened to the revolution after Spock started it. We know it failed because we see that on Deep Space Nine, but we don't know how, we don't know why, and we don't know what happened to him. Well, now we know. We know exactly what happened to him and the whole story. So let's start with that, Charles, and then we'll backtrack to through the mirror.
Charles, what did you think about Jake? Let me make one editing on your story because I had to look it up. J.K. did the artwork for the second story. He did not do the artwork for story A.
And Tipton and Tipton
wrote
both.
Yes. But
that's right. J.K. only did the art.
He did the story art for B only. But that they had actually story art and then a colorist do story A. But J.K. did all the artwork himself for B. I'm going to do a little bit of a
He also did the covers as well.
Right. I'm going to do a little bit of plug for J.K. in this episode. Saturday night was a quiet evening, and I'm just sitting on Facebook, and all of a sudden J.K. posts, "Oh, I'm going live." Okay, I'm going to go see what he's doing. And he's doing a cover for a third book, and I don't know the whole story about this cover. But he sat there and started painting part of the design on this picture. And I think watching him, we suddenly realized how tedious his artwork can be, because he's going in with watercolors and washes and going over the paints trying to get this great look to what he wants, to just get in the right shade. And so I love his work.
I bopped in and watched part of that as well, Charles.
The whole thing. That was a fun evening.
My signal kind of goes in and out up there, but I watched about 10 minutes of it, and it was really fascinating. If you're interested in artwork and what goes into making a comic, you want to go on his Facebook page and check that out, because he explains to you what the different brush strokes are, how he gets the shading the way he likes it, why he does the washes, and it's if you're interested in comic books and what goes into them, it was definitely a very interesting video to watch. J.K. does a really great job.
But between the two stories that we've had, story A and story B, I've been more tied into wondering what happens in story B. B was really a compelling story because I always do have a little bit of soft spot for backstories. And this was a fascinating backstory to see what did happen to Spock. And how we did get these attacks on the Prime Universe. And we never quite get the full story, but we get a good story in there trying to find Spock. And I was always curious, issue to issue, what was going to happen. Was he going to find him?
Charles? When I got each issue, I jumped right to the back to read that story first before I got to the main story, because I was so interested in the Spock story.
Yeah, I'd go through the first story just because I'd have to open digitally in order. But I was always like, okay, I got to the first story. Now I got to see what happens with J.K.'s story. And that was definitely an interesting one to go through and realize what's such interesting, how devoted a character, Data, is on a mission. No matter how you look at Data, Data still tries his hardest to try doing his best to help those that need his ability.
Yeah, and I like the way the way Spock was like the leader of the resistance. It was a obviously a different resistance, but you had Andorians and Tellarites and Klingons and whatnot that were hanging out with Spock and attempting to protect him from Mirror Data unsuccessfully too, I might add. But I did find that story really intriguing, and every week when the issue came out, I jump right to the end to see what's going on with Spock. I thought they did a great job with that, and J.K.'s story was awesome. And I want to also plug J.K. while we're plugging J.K., let's plug him. Let's go all out. he does a podcast called Trek Yourself, and I had the pleasure of being on his podcast. And I tried to be on it last week, but like I said, I was up at camp, and I get a bad signal, but I'm going to try it again, and you guys can check that out on Facebook. Go and check Yourself and JK's podcast. It's a lot of fun. But TJ, what's going on with JK at Freakopolis Geekery? While we're going, let's go full on JK here. What's going on at Freak? You got some special news about JK from Freakopolis Geekery. Why don't you let everybody know about that?
Yeah, I can't say too much just yet because I don't want to get anybody's hopes up, but we're working closely with him to have some original art for sale at the Freakopolis Geekery, either in-store or online, and potentially at Trek Conroga if anybody's going to be there this summer, if there's any left. But yeah, he's looking through his library now, and we're hoping to work a deal out where we get some of his original artwork, and you can see it and find it at the Freakopolis Geekery. So very excited at that. This is something we've wanted to do for a long time, and JK just seems like a perfect fit because of our huge Star Trek community, our proximity to the original series set tour, and us kind of having a relationship with him thanks to Trek talking and stuff. So very excited at that. And I'll keep you guys posted. That'll definitely be, you guys will be knowing every step of the way.
Yeah, I'm kind of psyched about that too. So Jamie, you just joined us, so I'm gonna let you jump in first. So what did you think about the Spock story? We're going to go backwards. We're talking about the end and working up. So what did you think about how they handled Mirror Spock and when he was the Emperor, and how they wrapped up that story? What did you think about that? Did you like it?
Yeah, I don't know. He just kept reminding me of a young Picard. I don't know why. Just the way that he did things and ran things as Emperor, but I don't know, I always like his uniform in the Mirror Universe versus the Prime, but I thought they did a really good job telling it, and of course JK did an excellent job with his story, and I'm looking forward to seeing what JK does in the future with these little stories.
Yeah, I'm hoping that he'll be working on I'm hoping that he'll be working on the next issue when it comes out. Emma, go in the other room. That's my Klingon Targ is barking here at on in the background. That is not Karen being an Ewok. That is my dog. So Eric, what did you think about the Mirror Spock Emperor story and how what happened between him and Data?
Wow, that was a good story. First of all, I love the title of it. They call it Ripe for Plunder. And it sort of made me start to view this whole story as it's kind of like a pirate story. And then it kind of made me go back and say, you know what? Mirror Broken is actually kind of a pirate story too, because, I mean, they're just, all they're trying to do is steal the Enterprise. That's what their whole deal is, right, in that whole series. And so in this one, we've got Data, who's on his mission to find Spock and get some information out of him. And I was amazed at how much story they were able to tell in only 4 pages an issue. The rest of the book was 16 pages, the other story that we'll talk about in a second. So 16 pages versus 4 pages. And I actually kind of feel like we had almost as much story development, a little less detail, you know, a little less filling in the nooks and crannies and stuff. But one of my favorite parts of this is just that Data is one of my favorite characters in Next Generation of all time. And I love that first of all, I love the way he looks in the Mirror Universe, his Borg upgrades, and the fact that he's got that right arm that he can switch in and out for different things and, you know, kind of customize himself. I mean, it's like if you just took Data and just made him really, really a badass. That's the Data that we get in this story. When he eventually finds Spock, who he's been looking for, I love that Spock has this look of the kind of old sage. You know, he's got the long white robe, he's got the long white beard, he's got the long white hair. He just looks like he's in his latter years, and he's the guru that you know, everybody would be seeking out. And there's so much dialogue in some of these issues, particularly issue 4, where he eventually finds Spock and they sort of have this conversation about what happened after the events of Mirror Mirror, essentially, and how we got from Mirror Mirror to the Mirror Universe stuff that we see in DS9. Just great story development. I'm really interested, like, why was Spock surrounded by Tellarides? You know, why were they the protectors of the once Emperor? You know, spoiler alert, at the very end of the last book, Data walks out covered in blood from where Spock and all the Tellarides were with the information he needs. So I'm assuming that means that we have now seen the official assassination of Emperor Spock and that it was done by Data.
I would agree. And TJ,
yeah, so.
An interesting mirror here. When Spock and Data meet in Unification, there's a whole dialogue between them, which is great. How Data says to Spock that, you know, Spock's trying to abandon everything that Data's trying to accomplish, and that the two of them are mirror images of each other, where Spock is trying to get rid of his humanity and become a Vulcan, and Data is on the opposite quest. Data wants to become more human and get rid of his androidism, or, you know, and the two of them kind of forge this bond together as the episode, you know, progresses, and Spock learns from Data that, you know, it's his humanity that makes him unique. And then in JK's story, in the Mirror Universe, we find out that Spock and Data they're kind of on the same page, except Data is the one that ends Spock. So what did you think about that whole transition between, you know, do you think Data's really evil? Would you say that Data's evil in this book, or how would you describe him and his interaction with Emperor Spock, ex-Emperor Spock?
That's a really good question. I think Data in this story was a little bit like the Terminator, maybe, you know, more capable, higher type of being than your average person in the galaxy, and just like on a mission, like nobody could possibly stop. But whether or not he's evil, and I really enjoyed that. I thought these 20 pages or whatever we got of Data, 20 pages, was a great story. Like Eric said, they told a lot of good stuff in terms of, you know, they put the dialogue in the scenes where they really mattered. They kind of skipped over the idea of him really tracking him down. That was like a 2-page montage, but spent a lot of time in the discussions between Data and Spock and sort of the formulation of the plan, which was good. They needed to answer that question for it to fit, for the rest of the book to have had really any reason to happen. But whether or not Data is evil in the Mirror Universe, I don't think so. I think he is like Data in that he's on a quest to better himself, but his way of bettering himself differs from the Prime Universe in that he will sacrifice parts of himself for what he thinks is better. He will follow somebody to the ends of the earth or have a mission that nobody can stop if he thinks it's going to further his sort of own position and standing in the empire. You know, whether that makes him evil or not, I guess, is up for interpretation. But he definitely seems like he's trying to further himself and his sort of being instead of further his connection to human emotions and things. He has more ambition, I think, and less sort of humanity, maybe.
Yeah, I would buy that.
He's kind of driven by the humans who are around him, right? So in the Prime universe, he wants to become more compassionate, more understanding, and tune in with his emotions and stuff because that's what the humans in the Prime universe do. In the Mirror universe, he's all about personal gain. You know, how much can he get for himself? How much can he perfect himself? How high up the chain can he get? And it's just, Data's just a reflection of the people who are around him, I think.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. And Charles, I watching Data in this episode and how he deals with Spock, do you see a correlation between the way Lore dealt with Picard and his crew when they were captured by the rogue Borg?
Not really. I think I just kind of see – I'm not sure I see a big connection between Spock and Data as much as Data was on a mission trying to find him to find out how the Prime Universe came across, whereas Spock, I think, was just trying to hide himself. He just didn't want to be found. As the Empire was slowly rewriting history, trying to erase Spock so that people could not find the truth, which is somewhat the same thing that Cornwall wants to do in the Prime Universe, is kind of erase the link to the Mirror Universe because they don't want people trying to travel between the two. So I think it's more like Spock and Cornwell have a little bit of a connection there to how they were trying to keep the universes apart. And there are others who are trying to re-put them back together.
Now, while we're talking about traveling between the universes, well, why don't we delve right into the A story, Charles, the issue that all the issues in the storyline, which basically was the Mirror Enterprise crew, Picard and Riker and them, they want to come through to our universe and steal the Enterprise D and beam it back to the Mirror universe so that they have two Enterprise battleships to conquer the Mirror universe with, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
That's the story. So what did you think about that entire story?
At the beginning, it was really getting interesting, and you kind of wondered what happened. But the last part for me kind of fell apart. I think it kind of just jumped in there where, they're going to try their last bit, and then all of a sudden, nope, the Enterprise crew comes in, saves the day, and prevents them from taking the ship. Which I thought, I would have liked to have seen the story a little different. But this also gives us a little bit of a tie-in to the next series based on the last two pages, I believe. So at least we're knowing this isn't coming to a full end, but we are still going to get another different series out of this, which will probably be another 4-part or 5-part series.
And you know, one of the things I find interesting about this whole thing, TJ, is that these comic books are actually mirroring Discovery because, as Charles said, it appears that the next issue, well, and this one to a lot of extent, is mirror characters trying to fit into the Prime universe like Lorca had to do on Discovery. And we're going to see that in the next series with a character that escapes from the end of this book. So what do you think, TJ, about that that character escaping and the way they wrap the ending of this up?
Yeah, I think I want to note something for the end of the show. Just come back to me when we get there, but because it has to sort of do with this. But yeah, so in issue number 5 of Through the Mirror, we see Picard saying something along the lines of, like, we knew people from the Mirror Universe have tried to come over before, but they weren't able to fit in all that long or something. It seems like you've done a better job. Something along those lines. And I was wondering if that was Picard talking about the incident with Lorca. I suppose there could be other ones too, but that's what came to mind for me. So maybe that is common knowledge. But yeah, the last sort of post-credit scene, if you will, of Through the Mirror itself alludes to, well, basically Barclay hits, Mirror Barclay hits Prime Barclay over the head with some sort of machinery and promises to spend some time in the Prime universe and try and further himself and further his name. And that's leading into IDW's next series, which comes out, I think it is July 4th, Star Trek Terra Incognita. So it seems we're going to be following some more of these Mirror Universe characters. In particular, we'll be following Barclay in the Prime universe. And yeah, I mean, that's very much mirroring the stuff that we saw in Discovery. So I'm totally into it. I love Barclay. I think he's super cool, and especially his Mirror Universe been sort of following along for a couple series now. For him to get maybe his own series and spend some time incognito, I think is awesome.
Well, it's great because Mirror Barclay despises Prime Barclay, and he thinks that he doesn't have respect. He has no honor.
Right.
People talk down to him. They call him Broccoli, and he just wants to go out and kick some ass. But I think he's going to find it's not quite that easy. You don't run around in the Prime universe just kicking people's asses because you disagree with them like you do in the Mirror universe. So it's going to be interesting to see how he deals with that.
He's going to end up getting court-martialed or something and locked up.
Yeah. So, Eric, what do you think about that whole Mirror thing? Do you think, like TJ said, do you think that Picard is talking about Mirror Giorgio or Mirror Lorca, or maybe he's referring to Mirror Kirk and Bones and Scotty and Uhura when they, you know, came through in the original Mirror Mirror? What do you think he's referring to when he makes that comment?
I kind of made the assumption that he was talking about TOS, so Mirror Mirror, only because at the end of Mirror Mirror, we don't hear anything further about, you know, making sure that we keep this secret or anything like that. Whereas in Discovery, we have this idea that the Mirror Universe has to be kept secret from everybody else. So I think he's talking about the connection there, which is interesting because then it ties into the last story where the final 4-page story, the Ripe for Plunder story, where, you know, we get to see the vestiges of what happens after Mirror Mirror. That was my guess. I think one of my favorite things, and what's interesting is I went back and I listened and I was a little critical of some of these artists, but I think one of the interesting things about this series is that they showcase different artists in each issue. And so all 5 issues all have different artists and colorists and that sort of stuff. And so it gives each book just a little bit of a different flavor. And I think one thing that I've noticed is that when I'm following a single story, I tend to like the art to be consistent throughout the story, just because I think the art and the actual writing meld together to really give you the story. And if you're changing the art, it's a little bit it's a little bit jarring, just because I think the story is told in a slightly different way with the art. I'd be interested to know, you know, did the same person storyboard all five issues, or how was the art actually planned out? I know it's executed in different ways, you know, from a technical standpoint, but was it actually planned out by a single entity? That would be interesting to know. I guess the overall, I'm really digging the story. I agree wholeheartedly with all the Barkley stuff you guys have said. The one character who I didn't really care for in the story was Worf. I think in the first couple of issues, I don't know, it just doesn't feel like Worf to me. He's not saying Worfy things. I know he's kind of chasing down people, which is what Worf would do, but I just was not satisfied with his dialogue in the book. I don't know if anybody else picked up on that, but other than that, I like Mirror Troy. I love Barkley. I kind of like, you know, I love Geordi. Love his cool different visors, you know, his little individual eye visors that are kind of implanted in his face. Love all that stuff. Not really digging the way that they represented Worf, but overall, series is good.
Well, you know, I think the reason, being a weekly book, I don't think they would have been able to have one artist do the entire book in a week.
No, but the weekly is just release schedule too. I mean, they could have had this whole thing done, you know, months ahead of time and then released it. But I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that they actually wanted to showcase these different artists. And I, you know, I think that that's a very cool thing for IDW to be doing. I think from a consistent storytelling standpoint, it was just a little odd for me to have it changing, you know, weekly and every single issue.
Yeah, the weekly thing was strange, but gave us the opportunity to talk about the whole story right now instead of having to wait 5 months. So,
well, yeah, it beats the heck out of some of these titles that I read that come out every other month, right? Those are the ones that really are awful. When you get 6 issues a year, you're like, oh, my God, it's killing me.
Yeah, I don't know if
right,
I love
right.
weekly titles, but I do love books coming out on time. So I think I'm okay with a weekly title if it means we're going to definitely get one every week.
Yeah, good point.
So, Jamie, what did you think about this whole mirror story and how they wrapped it all up? Did you like the story?
Yeah, I liked it, but I definitely agree that Worf could have had stronger dialogue that represented him in a better way. You know, I liked what they did with you know, connecting back to the Prime universe and the Mirror universe. And, you know, I'm just looking forward to seeing what happens. But I don't know. Maybe there could have been a better way for them to put more Klingon action in there. But, you know, it is what it is. And there's more books coming out, so maybe he'll make a better appearance in the next couple of issues.
Well, I think the biggest problem you have when you're dealing with mirror stories is Worf doesn't exist in the mirror universe. That character is the regent, actually, trying to retake Deep Space Nine. He's not in any of these stories. So they have to come up with a way to get that character in the story that doesn't seem like they just stuck him in there, which is the way this kind of felt. But I gave him a pass on it because the story wasn't about Worf. He was just kind of like a background character almost. You know, I was more fascinated with Picard A and Picard B and Riker A and Riker B. And you know, I really liked when Prime Data tore off Mirror Data's Borg arm. I thought that was pretty
that was
cool.
Awesome.
And I was like, whoa, yep. Take that.
Well, I love the whole stare down. In that one issue, there's a stare down between the entire, I think it's the end of like the fourth issue, where you kind of get the two sides facing off against each other face to face, the mirror on one side, the prime on the other side. I thought that was great.
That was awesome. That was one of the best parts, especially Mirror Troy, because you never get to really see Troy on away teams much. But in this case, she was there.
You know what's interesting, though, is I was really digging her character in Mirror Broken, and I kind of liked this role that she had as the Inquisitor. So she's kind of like the advisor to Picard, and he's got her on the side, and you almost kind of get this idea that Troy might secretly have just a little bit more control over things than people are giving her credit for. I feel like Through the Mirror went against that. She seemed a little petty in this one to me. You know, she has these little spats with Barkley about whose fault things are. And I mean, I guess in some ways it's good to develop the idea that these Terran folks out for themselves all the time is not a really mature way of looking at things. And maybe they would get farther in life if they actually did work together. But it was kind of interesting how I think Troy was just depicted two different ways between the two different series, when in fact I know that some of the same artists and writers and those sort of folks were working on both books.
Well, if you remember, Emperor Giorgio was talking to Tilly on the Klingon, on the Orion base on Kronos, and she talks about wiping out the Bajorans. I mean, wiping out the Betazoids. And so, you know, if we take that, obviously, would mean that Troy is probably one of the very, very few Betazoids that's left around, if not the only one, in the Mirror Universe. And she's Picard's pet. Maybe he pulled some strings to get her. I don't know. But we're led to believe that there are no more Betazoids left in the Mirror Universe because Giorgio wiped them out. So,
yeah, you're right.
You know,
that's,
maybe that's why she's
interesting.
You know, she's hiding. She's hiding with Picard because he protects her and keeps her safe. That was just, you know, the way I was looking at it, but. So,
did anybody notice the one little, I was just going to say, oh, sorry, I just wanted to mention the one little inconsistency, speaking of the art in issue 5, the way that Data was shown versus how he's shown in all the other issues. Did anybody else notice the difference? It's the scene, actually, I think, well, you might get to see it before, but it's the scene where Prime Data rips off the other one's arm. They actually show pretty clearly that his right arm is also made of metal, which I don't think any of the other Mirror Universe issues have shown Data's right arm as a metal arm. They've all shown that as kind of his typical humanoid Data arm, and his left one is the one that's got the gadgets and stuff on it. So that's the kind of stuff that I'm talking about in terms of the art being a little jarring when an artist chooses to all of a sudden actually change the way a character is drawn at near the end of a series. Just an interesting choice there.
Oh, I didn't notice that. I'll have to go back and check that out. I didn't even notice that. There was so much action and phaser fights and explosions and stuff going on. I didn't pick that up.
Yeah, they showed on that page right before everybody beams out.
Before we move on to the Light of Kaelas, though, what grade would you guys give these 5 issues, Charles? What would you recommend them to people?
I'd recommend them somewhere either A-, B+. It was still a well-put-together series. Even with its flaws, it's still a well-put-together series and another good storyline that we never have gotten from the TV series.
Right, it filled in a lot of gaps.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ? Would you recommend it to readers that are Star Trek fans that want to get into the comics? Would you say this was is a good read for them?
Definitely, yeah. I would definitely recommend it. I think B plus A minus is pretty on point. I would say if you haven't read Mirror Broken yet, pick that up first. Sort of the origins of the Next Generation Mirror crew, and then move on to Through the Mirror, which is also very good.
And how about you, Eric?
Yeah, totally agree with TJ. I would read Mirror Broken first, but then that being said, I give it, you know, I'd be more in the, I'll go a half a step lower, B to B plus range. It's the JK stuff that brings it up to an A for me, and it's the just little things in the other stories that bug me here and there, but overall, definitely worth the $4 an issue, I think.
Yeah, definitely. And what about you, Jamie? Would you think people that are...
I would definitely recommend reading this book, but reading the issue before that. And I definitely think that JK did a good job in terms of bringing the story together, but it didn't ruin it for me in terms of the story A versus B. But I did notice a thing about the little issues with the art here and there, but it didn't make me not want to read the book. I mean, that's what makes the Discovery book so great, is because I have yet to, I pay attention to that now every time I read when we're reading a new book by a different artist. And so far I haven't seen that in Discovery. I mean, I think Succession was really good. I didn't see anything where, okay, well, you saw one character and then their head was slightly bigger or smaller, but I do think it makes a big difference because some people are really precise about how the art is and how like we were talking about with Worf and how his character ties into the story and was his dialogue right and did it make sense. But I haven't yet to see anything in there that didn't make sense. Sometimes I have seen things that are like, what? Why would this person say this thing versus something else? But JK seems to always tie his stories together, and he never leaves you wondering unless it's meant to be there. If it's an open ending, he leaves it open, and if it's closed, he closes it.
Yeah, JK is the bomb. So let's move on to Discovery, Light of Kaelas. This has been going on for a long time, the Light of Kaelas. We finally got the final issue number 4, and it's been months and months. It's been more than 4 months to get these 4 issues, but I'm glad. The artwork in all 4 of these issues has been just top-notch. I've been very impressed. And the story, I'm really, really digging this story. And, you know, I've asked TJ to get me the graphic novel when it comes out because I like to read it. I like to read it all through in one pass instead of individual stories. And you have to go to issue number 2. That kind of bugs me. I want to be able to sit down at camp, open it up, and read the whole thing as one continuous story. But this one, I really, really liked it. I liked how it started with Takuma and the ship of the dead on his father finding it, and his whole story about him as a kid and his sister and the House of Kor, and how it goes right straight through the whole thing and ends with the Battle of the Binary Stars, which is the pilot episode for Discovery. I love that arc. It just covers a lot of space, fills in a lot. And the one thing that I really found fascinating, the thing that got me the most out of it, was that when we find out that the Torchbearer and the light of the Torch of Kaelas, that I forgot the character's name. Was it Takuma's father? Or was it Volk's father? Somebody actually made that, created it, made it up. It wasn't real. And they lied to the Klingon people. Kind of like we saw in the episode Birthright when Kaelas showed up and he wasn't really him. He was a clone. And when they find out that it's not real, and then Laurel says to him, well, it's not the torchbearer that needs to be real. It needs to be the message that counts. And I thought that was a great moral for the whole story.
The guy who built that was his childhood friend. His name was Kel, K-H-E-L. And Kel's the one who actually built the light of Kalis, essentially, which I agree with you, Jim. Like, man, talk about a big surprise at the end of the series. I felt like that kind of came out of left field. I was not expecting that at all.
No, that caught me way off guard when I finally, and that's near the end. That's like the third or fourth page from the end when that's revealed to you.
It's right.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty intense, and it's cool because it looks, it looks like a, I love the look of that thing. It looks like a really cool Klingon Cylon ship.
And you know what's interesting about it? It makes you wonder, did he actually have visions of Kalest when he was in the lava pits on Boroth? Or did he make that all up too?
I think that's a cool question to ask, Jim, because I think that's a question that a lot of people ask of almost anyone who goes on a spiritual journey, right? It's like if somebody goes on some sort of spiritual journey and they see something or they hear something or they're motivated to do something because of the spiritual journey, there's a question of whether that information that inspires them comes from within or comes from without, outside of themselves. And I think that's a really good question because all through this series, I agree with you. This is such a great series. The art is great. The writing is great. It's just, this is my favorite one of all of them. I really like this series. And there's this, T'Kuvma's arc through this whole thing is so interesting, and their complex relationships and complex ideas that are being dealt with that have to do with family and race and gender and how things are treated in particular societies and things. There's some aristocracy versus, the proletariat type themes in here. It's just such a complex story, and it's told as a flashback. Right, it's told by Laurel to Voke in the moments before the Battle of the Binary Stars, and it fills in all the gaps. It gives you everybody's motivation. It gives you Kor's motivation. It gives you T'Kuvma's motivation. It gives you Laurel's motivation. You get to meet T'Kuvma's sister and her motivation. It's just so good.
Well, Eric, I never questioned his visions or his honor until we got to that page where we found out it was false. And cast a shadow of doubt on it that wasn't there before. I'm thinking to myself, this puts a whole new layer on this whole thing.
It's true, but it's also something that we've talked about before, because this is exactly like the episode of Next Generation where they bring back a clone of Kalis. And there's this whole question of, they kind of prove that he's not the greatest warrior that ever lived, because Worf is pretty easily, can defeat him pretty easily. But as they go through the entire episode, they realize that it's not the man Kalis that matters. It's the idea of Kalis that matters. And I think this series takes that same stance. It says, you know what? It's not T'Kuvma. It's not Kalis. It's not Voke. It's the whole concept that they're working with here, and it's the whole idea of uniting the Klingons. Remain Klingon, right? That's the one phrase that we keep seeing throughout Discovery and we keep seeing throughout this whole book. Remain Klingon. Unification is the whole idea of this series.
So, TJ, what are your thoughts on this? On this final book in the light of Kalis? We've been talking about it for a long time, and the end is finally here.
Yeah, it's been like a 6-month series, four issue series, which is unfortunate, but that sort of stuff happens in comics. Overall, though, I quite like this. I think it had a lot of good things going for it. The idea that it is a flashback that Laurel is telling to Voke. All those themes that are presented, like this sort of religious proletariat uprising Takuvma provides to the Klingons. The reveal at the end of this last issue was great. It really all tied it together in terms of, you know, showed that it was Takuvma that was going to bring the people together, not this mythical creation or, you know, a beacon. I quite enjoyed the themes. I think it really shines in showing off some of Klingon architecture and artwork and sort of culture through imagery. I quite enjoyed that a lot. Some of the panels, like the character panels, were a little stiff and stuff, but it really shines in the sort of background and the setting. So overall, quite enjoyed Light of Kaelas. Pretty solid for a four-issue miniseries. They were able to tell a really succinct and interesting story. It makes me, you know, it feels like we got a little ripped off in Discovery because I want to see more Takuvma. But, you know, of course, that wasn't the story they wanted to tell. But, he seemed super cool in this series. So I wish we had more of him on screen.
And how about you, Charles? What did you think about issue number 4?
I enjoyed the series. I'm not as big of a Klingon fan as others here. But I think the one thing that this series and several books are doing that we really wanted is that this fills all the gaps in that we're missing from Discovery. Discovery left with so many holes, and this time where we're sitting there saying, oh, well, here's kind of filling the holes a little bit and wondering at least one possible explanation of how it happened. So I think they're really doing a good job with helping fans that are serious about knowing all the different details, getting a lot of the backstories, because I think some of the backstories are either matching or at least going through with the writers of Discovery itself. So we're getting both sides connecting. And I think that's my biggest thing,
and,
is I'm loving the fact, the tie-in between the two.
And you know what I thought was really cool about it, Jamie, was when we see Discovery in the pilot, we see Michael Burnham go out to this damaged Federation beacon, and there she finds the beacon of Kaelas. And then in the comic book, we find out that was all planned. That was all part of this intricate plan to start a war with the Federation to set up the unification of the Klingon people. And that whole thing was all set up by Takuvma's clan, you know, decades and decades and decades and decades ago.
Yeah.
And what did you think about that story, Jamie? Did you like it?
Yeah, I mean, I was really shocked with Burnham's growth throughout this comic, and I do like that they filled in some of the blanks in comparison to the show, but it would have been nice to have seen more of that in Burnham in the show, but maybe in the next one we'll see her develop her sense of being, I guess you could say.
Yeah, she decides that. Well, let's talk about that. Excuse me for a second. Burnham decides that she needs to attack the Klingons first, because Sarek tells her that's the Vulcan hello, and so she's going to take over to Sinjar and have Saru attack the Klingons, and Eric, do you think she made the right move?
Well, it turns out in the end she was right, because at the very end of season one, what happens except exactly a giant threat, right? They hand over the detonator, the planet detonator, to Laurel, and they basically say that the way to actually bring everybody together and stop the fighting and stuff is to threaten them. So I think that Burnham, at the beginning of Discovery, using her learned Vulcan logic, was making the most logical decision at that point. So, yes, that's why I actually love the beginning of Discovery, because I kind of feel like they do a really good job of taking this human who has been trained as a Vulcan, and they show what type of decision that person would make. You know, the fact that she's actually willing to mutiny against her captain and that sort of stuff. It's a good opening. And I do think that she made the most logical decision at the beginning of the series. You know, turns out it was not exactly didn't go down the way she wanted it to, but.
No, definitely not. Now, TJ, what do you think? Do you think that had Georgiou stayed unconscious for another 45 seconds and she was able to order Saru to fire and Saru had fired, do you think that would have changed the outcome of what we saw on Discovery?
Ooh, I'm sure it would have to some degree, yeah. Of course, how far things would have changed is hard to say, but I think it probably would have made a big difference. And I don't know, maybe they should do a comic about that.
Yeah, because well, she did commit mutiny, but I think it was for the right reason. And I think that her logic was completely logical in that case. But at any rate, so that pretty much wraps up another comic corner, guys,
Jim.
Is hard to believe.
Hold on, Jim. Jim, there's one more spoiler. Did you guys get the spoiler in the last issue of Light of Kalis? Oh, my gosh. I hope this comes up in the future. So several pages from the end, maybe like 3 or 4 pages from the end, we get the return of a young albino Klingon that we all think might have been killed. Takuvma's sister's baby. Remember they said that she killed the baby because the baby came out albino. And it was killed, but we never see a body. So in Star Trek, we know that if somebody dies and we don't see a body, it's a little suspect. And so a few pages from the end of that fourth issue, a kid shows up with the white skin, and I wonder if that might play into some future Discovery issues or not, or episodes or not.
Yeah, I did. Notice that, and that's a good question.
That just
the writers of the show work on the comic books, so
yeah,
nothing happens
yeah.
by accident. It's all got a plan.
Nothing happens by accident, and it felt like a thing that they actually acknowledge it in that panel, and they kind of I think Vok or maybe Takuvma says something about it, and then they just let it go, and they don't show anything more about it. So that kind of got me wondering. Where does that baby fit into the overall Discovery story?
Maybe season 2. Huh.
Maybe. Anyway, just wanted to bring that
up.
Thanks.
TJ, you wanted me to come back to you before we wrap things up because there was something you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I just thought it was interesting that because we've been doing cadet training for so long and been looking for sort of things connecting all the episodes to Discovery or to each other, that I just had a note about this month's comics and that they all sort of deal with power in succession, not just Succession or Light of Kalis, where obviously Succession is the power vacuum left from Georgiou. Light of Kalis is Takuvma's rise to power through the mirror, deals with, not as directly, but definitely Picard's crew, mirror crew, and how he is sort of taking initiative to bring some of the mirror universe under his, he even says in one of the issues that now many of the ships are in his debt because of what he's been able to pull off in the Prime Universe. So I just thought it was an interesting theme sort of running through all of these. the idea of ambition and secession and rise to power. So really enjoyed all three of these comics, and that was just my little note on the end there.
Now our we talked a little bit before the show. Our next show is scheduled to be on Monday, July 9th. However, 4th of July is on Wednesday, and they're right in the middle of the week. So that last week, that second week in July, is going to be my vacation for the 4th of July, which means I will be up at camp on Monday the 9th. So we talked before the show, and we're going to do this the next show, Comic Corner number 4, presented by Freakopolis Geekery, the Star Trek edition, will be on July 16th, same bat time, same bat channel. So mark that on your calendars and come back and have some fun with us, Trek talking about the comic book. So thank you to TJ, and thanks to Charles, and thanks to Eric and Jamie for hanging out with us and talking about some Star Trek books. And we'll do this all again next month. What books are we going to be looking at, TJ?
It will be the final issue of the third issue of Star Trek Secession, as well as, I believe, I'm sorry, I should have this memorized by now, but we take a look. Yeah, so July 4th, we get issue number 3 of Star Trek Discovery Succession, and I think Terra Incognita will be out by then. Let's see if I can.
And we talked about one book we wanted to do, which we didn't get around to tonight, which was the Kelvin Universe's Khan series.
Yes, we're gonna cover that one on the next show. Khan, as inspired by Star Trek Into Darkness. We were all set to do that one, but as TJ mentioned, we had so many other things to cover that I didn't think we'd have time for that. So we bumped that to next week. Next month.
Yep, so definitely Khan and Succession. I think that's it.
And possibly Terra Incognito.
Looks like it's
right.
July 25th.
Ah.
So, yeah. Right on the other side.
Well,
we'll
might
come
need
up
one
with
more
some
book.
Other, some, yeah, we
yeah.
might need something else.
Totally.
We'll come up with it. We got time. Well, thank you, Charles. Thank you for hanging
thank
out
you.
With us tonight. I appreciate it. And thank
Always.
You, TJ. If you guys can pick any of these books up at Freakopolis Geekery in Whitehall, New York, check them out. You can find them on Facebook. And TJ will be more than happy to help you out. Thanks, TJ.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man.
And Eric, thanks a lot for joining us. It's always fun to have you hanging out, Trek talking, even if we're comic talking. It's still Trek related, and we have a blast with you. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Yeah, I love hanging out with you guys and talking comics or whatever we're talking about. And I'm looking forward to our next Trek Talking, which might be, I might be giving a little bit of a report from Origins, which might be kind of fun.
Looking forward to it. And Jamie, thanks a lot for hanging out with the old man tonight. It's always fun to chat with you about Star Trek and about comics. So, Trek Talking Thursday night, guys. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to break down the new Han Solo movie. Should you see it? Have you seen it? What do you think? We're going to chat about that. We're going to talk about Star Trek, the toys that made us. And we're going to talk about the Star Trek polls, which you can find currently on our Trek Talking and Beyond Facebook page. So, the nice little lady's telling me we got a minute left. So, thank you to all my excellent co-hosts. And thank you to each and every one of you guys for listening to us. Live, or is it Memorex? Hopefully you'll be able to find us on iTunes really soon. I'm still waiting for iTunes to approve us, but I have no doubt in my mind that they will. And I need to sign off and say goodnight to you guys because they're about to cut us off. Thanks a lot, everybody. We'll see you on July 16th for Comic Corner number 3, presented by Freakopolis Geekery. Have a good night, everybody.
Live long and prosper.
Night, y'all.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.